Welcome to the third in our series of podcasts on the topic of internal communication practice governance. This time, we're going to look at a crucial factor in enabling it to become a reality: the attitudes of the line managers themselves. In the initial poll we conducted on LinkedIn, everybody agreed that organizations would work better if line managers were getting a similar level of support with their internal communication activities as they do with managing their budgets. But there was a near 50-50 split over the question of whether or not the managers would welcome that support. So in this podcast, we'll look at how we might successfully allay the concerns of those managers who might be resistant. Now, obviously, the most sensible thing to do is to involve them in the process from the start. After all, none of us can have anything but our gut feelings to go on when it comes to the question of how they might react. Albeit most of us probably have a fair bit of experience to draw upon when we're making those calls. But maybe the idea of IC practice governance would be welcomed with open arms by many more folk than that poll suggests. Then again, maybe not. And it's not enough merely to consider the number of managers who might throw a wobbler at the idea of the IC team coming anywhere near their personal communication activities. Surely it's also going to be vital to find out what their objections would be. As Stephen Covey famously pointed out in The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, seek first to understand, then to be understood. But of course, the very act of seeking to understand how people feel about something means you need to broach the subject with them. How then might you need to position IC practice governance in such a way that line managers won't see it as an imposition, but only as good news for them? Now, this is likely to be a delicate balancing act, because on the one hand, there may be some managers who are feeling vulnerable and defensive, and as soon as you start talking about this, they may feel that their incompetence has been found out. On the other side of the fence, there could be managers who, rightly or wrongly, feel they're perfectly competent and would resent the very suggestion that they could benefit from any kind of support. And worse still, that they might be expected to follow a bunch of rules which would clip their wings and deny them the right to express themselves as they want to their people. Whoa! That would surely be a recipe for disaster, wouldn't it? So even talking about this requires some careful thought, and it may help if we think about how others have handled equally sensitive vocational subjects in the past. What if we were to follow in the footsteps of, say, the medical profession? Because for well over a century now, they've been following a principle of minimum hygiene standards, which weren't universally welcomed with open arms when they were first suggested. Now, minimum hygiene standards may not sound very sexy, but surely no one can be in any doubt as to how important they are and what can go wrong if the standards aren't met. That's why it doesn't matter how senior, how specialised, experienced or skillful a doctor may be, minimum hygiene standards still apply every time. Importantly, though, there's the question of what those standards cover and what they don't. Minimum hygiene standards don't dictate a doctor's or a nurse's bedside manner, but they do demand everybody scrubs up before entering an operating theatre. So the pivotal idea behind minimum hygiene standards is to remove needless risks from their interactions with the people they serve and each other, while leaving them free to respond to the humanity of the individuals in front of them. But when it comes to internal communication, some managers may feel that, in their minds at least, they're already meeting minimum hygiene standards. They're already taking care of all the needless risks of maybe communicating later than their team might like or not at all, of their language maybe being confusing or of overloading their people with stuff they don't need or leaving out things they do need and so on. As far as these managers are concerned, anything that isn't going to be an imposition on them would have to be so basic as to be irrelevant. Sure, they might say, there are plenty of other managers around here who need help to meet minimum hygiene standards, but not me. They may not say this out loud, of course, but it could be what plenty of them would be thinking to themselves right from the off. Interestingly, without even having been told what the standards are, which they've already decided they're meeting. So how can we rethink this in such a way that people may not be quite so quick to dismiss even a basic level of support? And here, a different metaphor may be useful, because when it comes to business improvement, many managers like to talk about raising the bar, don't they? Which is an expression which, of course, comes from the field of athletics, specifically the high jump. Now, at the time of recording this, the men's world high jump record stands at 2 metres 45 centimetres, which, let's face it, is mighty impressive. So impressive, in fact, that no one's bettered it since 1993. In fact, the gold medal was shared at the Tokyo Olympics by two guys who cleared 2 metres 37. So if we use that as a sort of metaphorical measure, any line manager who regularly clears the communication bar at, let's say, 2 metres 35 can surely consider themselves to be world class, can they not? Or can they? What could happen if they had a little extra support, even basic support? After all, that thing that a pole vaulter uses is a pretty basic piece of kit. It hasn't got an engine inside it or special weights or any kind of internal mechanism. It's just a pole. Yet while the high jump record is 2 metres 45, the current pole vault world record is 6 metres 18. So against that standard, how world class is that manager's 2 metres 35 looking now? Interesting, isn't it? Perhaps a little bit of basic support could go a very long way. So when it comes to internal communication, maybe there's a phrase that can speak to all line managers, regardless of how confident or vulnerable they may be feeling right now. And it's this: you don't have to be ill to get better. After all, internal communication is the only business activity done by everybody in every organization, from the chief executive to the cleaners. Even if all the cleaners might be doing is occasionally saying, "I've run out of bleach." And if you think about it, that isn't true of any other business activity. Not everybody manages people or budgets or does legal work or manages IT systems or does sales, but every single person does internal communication. And crucially, that means internal communication is the only activity which is subject to a couple of insidious truth gaps, which seem to catch out so many people and leave them more vulnerable and defensive or belligerent than they might need to be. So let's just look at these truth gaps for a second, because these are important. The first of them is enshrined in the phrase, "anyone can do it." Now, when it comes to internal communication, obviously this has to be true because everybody does do it. But of course, that phrase also has a colloquial meaning, doesn't it? When people say, "Well, anyone can do that," they're implying that it takes no specialist training or knowledge to do it well. But as we all know from communication overload, death by PowerPoint, and so on, that colloquial meaning is anything but true. And what's fascinating is what can happen if people unwittingly get caught out by the gap between the literal truth and the colloquial falsehood. Is it not likely that many such folk might now be telling themselves, "I should be good at internal communication because anyone can do it"? That's where they get caught out by the second truth gap, nestling inside the word "should". Now, to understand just how insidious this truth gap is, we can take a couple of simple phrases, like when driving a car, well, you really should be stopping at every red traffic light, shouldn't you? Or on a crowded train, you really should be giving up your seat to a pregnant woman. In both of these examples, the word "should" is implying a sense of duty or obligation, whether that's legal, moral, or whatever. And when it comes to internal communication, it would be tricky to suggest line managers don't have an obligation to be good at it because their team is relying on them. However, what if we were to say a flight from London to Paris should take, what, about an hour? Now there, when we say it should take about an hour, are we saying that flight has a duty to do so? No. In that context, what we're actually saying is it would be reasonable to expect that it probably will take about an hour. So we're talking about reasonable expectation there. But as we discussed in our first podcast, human beings aren't born with an internal communication gene, and business communication training courses tend to focus only on how to execute communications, not how to work out what, if anything, needs communicating in the first place. So hang on a second, how can it be reasonable for anyone to expect themselves to be skilled at doing something they've never been taught to do and for which they have no genetic predisposition? That is plainly absurd. So what these truth gaps mean, in effect, is that without IC practice governance to support them, line managers have, and have always had, a duty to fulfill an unreasonable expectation. And again, we wonder why imposter syndrome is so rife and why burnout is so common. So maybe all that any line managers need is some fairly basic support to meet minimum hygiene standards in order for them to really fly. But of course, they can do this only if they can be justifiably confident in that support, knowing for sure it isn't going to let them down. So in our next podcast, we'll start looking at how we can give them that necessary confidence in the support IC practice governance can give them. Thanks for listening. We hope you found this podcast useful. By all means, share it on LinkedIn or any other platform you like. And if you've any observations you want to make about the content, you can join us in the IC Practice Governance Group on LinkedIn. Until next time, take care.